Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Chain Attack.
Chain Attack is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated specializes in customer service, low prices, and prompt shipping. You can find our web store at www.discountgamesinc.com.
Welcome to Chain Attack. I'm your host, Trevor, and I don't have anything zippy to say this week.
I'm Jay, and I think Trevor's awesome. That's my the week.
I'm Josh, and Sky Team can absolutely take a flying leap off of a short pier, as far as I'm concerned. That game is frustrating. it's really good, but dang it, if I don't suck at it real bad.
So, how would you rate your frustration to enjoyment ratio with that game?
Gosh, what the heck?
Can I preface this before he answers? We've been playing it on Board Game Arena, and we don't do any communication.
Well, we had one game where we did. We were a little better on one game.
Sure, but the truth is that we just kind of go through the motions, and this is a two-player game that it's got forced sections of the game where you're not supposed to talk, and then a section of the game where you're supposed to talk, and we don't talk at all. So
you're doing an extra layer of difficulty.
Yeah, I guess in a way
we're playing it on technically the easiest level.
What? That's the easiest level.
There's a training level that's below this one.
I quit forever.
There is a training level below this one.
So I think I played the training level with my brother.
Yeah, probably.
Doesn't mean I like it.
Anyway, my wife and I play it almost as much as I play it with you. Just our game. Your and I games end a lot quicker. But
says something about something one partner versus the other. Yeah.
But my wife and I, we don't actually say too much to each other either when we play it. We do a little bit, but. But we've never won on this easiest scenario either. We get farther normally than you and I do,
mm-hmm.
but we still don't beat it. I don't think I've ever come close.
So between Trevor and his wife playing and Josh and Trevor playing on the easiest scenario, you guys have never succeeded in.
My wife and I beat it on training.
Okay, but. Other than training mode, there have been no victories.
We have not won, no.
Interesting.
We've not even come close to winning. In Josh and I's games, we've rarely made it past about turn three.
I feel like we had one game, the one where we probably were communicating a little bit, where we we were at the last space or whatever, you know?
Oh, I lied. The scenario that it's putting us on is the second tier. So they go green, yellow, red, black, I believe, as black is the hardest. And we're on a yellow scenario.
Geez, on black, I assume it just someone comes into your home and actively fires a machine gun at you while you play.
I don't know. We should try it, though. I mean, I can't go any shorter, right?
Just to know, right?
Yeah, just to know.
Mm-hmm. The other hotness on Board Game Arena that is totally worth trying because it's not physically out in the States till January is Daybreak. Which is a co-op game about overcoming climate change. And it's is it Matt Leacock that did Pandemic?
I think so, yeah.
So it has just a gorgeous art style. Like it's the most hopeful, game I've played in terms of that theme, you know, like, hey, we can pull this off, you know what I mean? And it's not as hard as Sky Team, though, I will say that. Like, I have actually beat it, but I basically have been obsessively playing about one solo game of it every night. It's like my, you know, nightcap solitaire, basically. It's anyway, so.
I only have 20 games going, Josh. You can invite me to another.
I tell you what, Board Game Arena, I mean, frankly, it has sold some games. So to you publishers out there, you are, it's probably good for you, just FYI.
Yeah, I have to admit that I won't be buying Russian Railroads, but I think there's a good chance I might buy Ultimate Railroads, which I think contains Russian Railroads.
Because is that like the sequel? I guess I didn't even know.
I believe Ultimate Railroads is like the combo pack of all the expansions and stuff.
Interesting. All right.
But I would have to look into it more. I'm not that serious. I'm just saying, you know, Russian Railroads is shot up on my enjoyment list pretty fast.
And I've even gotten to the point now where I'm playing games of Ark Nova online, real time with strangers.
What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really bizarre. So if you get, I think my performance is going to improve, like against you guys, I mean.
Because you're seeing other strategies or?
Because what?
They're teaching you tricks or?
No, just because I like. Practice? Yeah, and I think partly because I'm doing it in real time also.
Sure, yeah.
It does help. One of the downsides of Board Game Arena when playing it turn-based is you don't see your other players' turns.
Yeah, and especially like when you're doing it turn-based with like a billion games going, like Trevor and I, like when you have a complete lack of discipline.
Yeah, you come back to the game and you're like, wait a minute, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and you can't be like, what was I thinking? Like what? What animal yes, did I think I was going to put in the pen there, you know?
Yeah. I'm getting my butt handed to me in Heat, pedal to the metal. Like, it is the first racing game I have ever flubbed this bad.
I am definitely not good at that game. I can actively admit to that.
I have no clue what's going on because we're not playing at the table where I can watch other people taking their turns. I'm just basically stumbling over my own turn repeatedly. There's no guidance. There's nothing to help me. There's nothing to, no cues to follow. You know, I can't see the other person, you know, what they're playing to see, you know, how I should be doing it. So I'm just like blissfully, you know, in last place, not really understanding why.
Alas.
Have you been selling that one, Jay? Heat, pedal to the metal. You have to say it that way, don't you?
I thought that you were aware of this, but Heat was one where it blew up. Sold out of its print run very quickly and has been selling for crazy amounts of money online.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Interesting. Okay.
I knew it was selling for crazy amounts of money online, but I didn't know. I thought it had been Kickstarted or something. And
it's a pretty recent game, and I did have it. Probably a year old or something. And Asmodee was the company that. I was going to say manufactured, but I don't know if they manufactured or distributed or what, but put it out, I guess.
Yeah, because it's Days of Wonder. Oh, but Asmodee, they're the ones carrying it?
They're the one that I ordered it through, I guess.
Okay.
Asmodee owns Days of Wonder. And Asmodee owns everything. Or some, what they don't own, they distribute. So.
Yeah. Okay. Understood.
Yeah. Any other comments or such? On anything else before we move into the main topic?
I have I've fallen off the Starfield wagon. I'm sorry to admit to the team.
What made it fall off?
The holiday, I think. I fell out of rhythm with it. You know what I mean? Because it was kind of like that had been my nightcap for a while.
Uh huh.
There was a big update supposedly like a week or two ago that fixed a bunch of things and improved some things. So I haven't gone back. I've been too busy with other stuff. I'm level 5 or 6 in Baldur's Gate 3 with our Thursday night group. So I've been surprised that it's hung on that long. In fact, we're going to be playing again tonight. So
I have played Baldur's Gate 3 now on 4 separate occasions with my brother, one of his friends, and one of my old high school buddies. And I am impressed. I am technically impressed with the game. Every play has been kind of miserable for me. And it's like the combat. I mean, frankly, I'm doing is proving Jay's point that like the combat of D&D is crummy, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but I mean, last night we played and I was downed for probably an hour of the play, you know? So I'm like waiting for my turn to make a death saving throw, and I don't know. So that's been my experience so far. And I feel bad because my brother is like really excited about the game, and I know he really wants me to have a good time with it. But I am, every time I play, I'm getting closer and closer to the old man shakes fist at clouds, man.
What class are you playing?
Between the two of you.
I'm playing a bard.
Oh.
How do you feel about the game multiplayer versus, have you done any single player? Like, is how?
I have not.
I basically did what you would call the prologue single player before I started playing with my brother and friends. Like, yeah, that's all I've done solo. And I don't know, because even solo, you end up. So I didn't play with like a full party solo, right? Because even solo. Oh, you don't know either, because you haven't done it, right, Trevor?
Not solo. No, I've only played. I mean, so I will say this. I know enough about the studio and their previous games to have a pretty good idea what it's like solo. But I have not played Baldur's Gate 3 solo.
And what do you, I guess, what do you feel based on your other experiences with Larian?
I believe it's a better experience solo.
Mm.
Because here's why. If you play it solo, all the people in the game, the followers, they follow you.
Right.
When you're playing it with three other people, everybody's, it's like herding cats constantly. It is 10 times worse than a normal D&D game. Because in a normal D&D game, you have a DM there to kind of,
right,
you know,
kind of hurt, to herd the sheep or whatever.
Yeah, to mm-hmm. hurt the cats a little bit. When you're in a video game that allows you to walk wherever you want, and there's not anyone that's, I would tell people, declare someone as leader, everyone else follow them. You know, someone be the party leader, everyone follow them when they go somewhere so that the party doesn't get split. Because there's times when you get split and somebody accidentally starts a combat and the other person is miles away and you're literally missing part of your party and maybe even a very important piece of your party. And it's just, gosh, it's painful. A lot of the story elements are intended to be one person interacting with something. And yeah. Sometimes if you interact with one character and then the next character interacts the next time, it can be a kind of a wildly different experience. Also based on skills and things. You know, let's say you're playing a warlock, for example, or a sorcerer, and you've got really high charisma, and your followers have other, you know, good stats, but you can kind of hand pick. Well, a lot of times in a group of three or four people, somebody will just click on somebody and yeah. It'll start a conversation, and you'll need to have high charisma stats for that conversation to make it successful. And, you know, I'm a monk. My dump stat is charisma. I have like the worst charisma ever, and I'll accidentally click on some NPC. It'll start a conversation and it'll give me like four options, you know, intimidate, persuade. And I'm like, I can't do any of these things without a massive negative. And there's no way to like break out of the conversation and have somebody else step in.
Sure. Yeah.
So
interesting.
I mean, there's just all kind of, it's a little chaotic. And when you're curating all of the actions, you can make sure that things happen in a particular order. And I would say that combat is more difficult in multiplayer as well, because things like two characters move on the same initiative number, right? One of them is a wounded fighter type and the other one is a cleric. If you're running both of them, you activate the cleric first, you heal the fighter before he moves in. Well, multiple times we've had people not realizing that, you know, it's the cleric has a limited range on heals, and the fighter on the same activation, right, same initiative number, the fighter walks away from the cleric, and the cleric can't get range on him to heal him. Like, just crazy things like that happen constantly, because it is...
I'm actually glad that we're having this therapy session, because I am recognizing now that this is what's going wrong for me.
Yeah, you need
it's chaos, it's not... You know, like, it's funny because my brother and dad and I had played a ton of Gloomhaven online now,
mm-hmm.
which, so, two things. I mean, that's turn-based, right?
Well, and, so is Baldur's Gate 3.
I guess once you're in combat, it is. But, yes. But it's also more contained, right?
Yes, it's very much more contained.
Oh, yeah.
That's the difference, right?
The biggest difference, though, between Gloomhaven and Baldur's Gate 3 with that group, I think for most people, is that you communicated better in Gloomhaven because you needed to. The only times
because you didn't get very many missteps in Gloomhaven.
Right. Yeah, and so in Baldur's Gate 3, it's like you can make a few missteps and one guy sits on the ground waiting for his death save for an hour while they win the combat. Well, you shouldn't have chose Bard, but that's neither here nor there. The thing is like if you sat down and laid the ground rules and said, okay, this is the person we're going to follow. Before you take your action, let's just talk about the turn a little bit and plan out what we're going to do. Then a lot of those problems go away pretty quick. But I don't think anybody does that, right? You know, you kind of play.
No, and like human nature feels like if you suggest that to people, they feel like, you know, help, I'm being oppressed, I feel like.
Yeah, you're slowing us down. We could, your brother's going to say, let's just get started. It's going to be, it's totally going to be rough. But I think if you did some of that and said, hey, let's, you know, just lay a few ground rules, it would improve drastically. So I don't know.
Yeah, I should probably suggest that. Because I remember after the first time we played, my brother was like, he's like, well, you know, I was trying to let you guys make some decisions. And I kind of said, like, no, you should just railroad us a little more. I really just need to say, you need to just railroad the bejeebers out of us.
Yeah, I mean, don't spoil the story. He's played through it, I'm assuming.
Yes, yeah.
Don't spoil the story for me. But, you know, you can kind of guide us if we're looking to the next step of the railroad. You can take it. We don't have to spend an hour, you know, spinning circles around the map trying to figure out where we're going. Just show us. Like, it doesn't have to be hard. The finding those places is not the adventure. It's not what makes it fun, right? The fights and the conversations, those are what make it fun. And if instead you're spending your entire time, you know, doing circles because you can't read the map very well because it's kind of odd or whatever, it just doesn't. It's not worth it. There's no payoff, right? There's nothing that pays off at the end of that.
Agreed.
So, I don't know. That's one of my biggest struggles is in my group, I'm the only person who's played a significant amount of D&D 5th edition. The other three players have played some D&D in the past, but their experience with D&D 5th edition is very limited. And so, with their character builds, with their choices during combat, with basically everything they're doing, they're making very, I guess naive. I don't know how to put it without sounding a little bit rude, but like they just don't know what they're doing. And so they're sort of stumbling their way through it. And I feel like, you know, I could reach out and help them, but I'm trying to hold back and not do that. Mm-hmm. But I just see them constantly making mistakes and it gets so frustrating. I mean, the number of free strikes they take.
Okay. For the record, I have never done that, but like I got down last night because I walked into the room, which I felt like my fellow party members were already in the room, and yet the big boss that we were fighting, I'm his first target. So he just walks up and just wallops me, and I'm like,
so one thing you have to understand about Baldur's Gate 3 is the AI is not your DM. It does the most advantageous thing.
It looks for the weakest link and kills it, basically.
It absolutely does, guaranteed. It picks the lowest highest percentage chance to succeed, so lowest armor class and lowest hit points, and it will pick you off one at a time. So if you walk in and you're not paying attention, it will absolutely crush you. It does not pull punches. It does not, you know, flub the dice behind the screen like a DM does. It will beat you down. And so you have to be a little careful with that, because literally it will make things awful for you.
Well, it did.
And one of the frustrating things is sort of the combat. It doesn't give you, are you sure you want to do this sort of thing like a DM would, right?
Yeah.
If you click on the ground to walk away, there is a little red arrow that tells you that you're going to take a free strike. But if you're not paying attention, you can totally walk past something or through something that'll burn you or give you a free strike or do something dumb. And it never says you're going to do something dumb. Are you sure you want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
It never tells you that. I've been shot by my own party member with an arrow 4 times now, because there's no warning. Hey, that's your party member. You sure you want to do this?
I gave myself advantage on my next attack versus my party member. So that was my smart move.
Well, I got tired of it and I'm a monk. So the fourth time he did it, I caught the arrow and threw it back at him.
That's funny.
I'm like, I've had enough of this. I'm tired of you shooting me.
This is the only way he'll learn.
He has not shot me since.
See?
So, just saying.
There you go.
All right. We're off in the weeds.
Deep. Yeah, we're deep. Give us the discount games updates, Jay, besides all the games that you sold to me today.
I mean, just buy all the things everywhere from Discount Games Inc.
For those of you keeping score, from my Discount Games Inc. today, I purchased, let's see, Voidfall, The Fox Experiment, Emerge, and White Castle, which weirdly is not about a hamburger chain.
It's true.
Probably a missed opportunity there. I don't know.
So, Trevor, when we last left our group of intrepid adventurers, you teased us with choices that you made that at the time I thought were questionable, and I think in retrospect you feel were even more questionable, and I'm very excited to hear the story.
Okay.
He teased us with, what's the name of it? Something, Mr. President?
I actually don't remember. It is Mr. President something or other.
I'm looking it up. Hold on. It's the American Presidency, 2001 to 2020. Mr. President, : the American Presidency, 2001 to 2020. It looks amazing.
So should I start there or start with the first one that I... So I...
Let's begin at the beginning first. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So, over the course of the weekend, I read the rules to three different games that I did not play, and all of them ended up being because they were either, I don't know how to put it, they were either too complex or too. I don't even know what the term.
You didn't have the right alchemy of people and timing to get them to the table.
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly part of it. So the first one that I went to was a game that I've been interested in for a long time, right? So it's Role Player Adventures. And that's because...
Which, by the way, there's like a billion of them now.
Yes.
Okay, carry on.
So the reason I was interested in this game is because we played Role Player at some con in the past. And I was like very... surprised by it. I thought it was fun. I'm like, this is a good idea. This is kind of cool. I want to try this out. And then they came out with this idea. Well, you can take the characters you made in Role Player and play them in a campaign setting, a Role Player Adventures. So I checked out the game from the library at Board Game Geek, and I started reading the rules. And the more I read the rules, the more I was like, okay, this is how you take a really good game and you ruin it.
Oh, geez, really?
I probably should have given it more time and more effort. Uh-huh. I was just like, Role Player's fun, but Role Player Adventures requires the actual copy of Role Player to roll your own characters. If you don't have that, you just take pre-gens, which immediately turned me off. I'm like, oh, I can't even roll my own character to play in this.
There's not even like a quick start roll your own character kind of thing.
Nope.
Yeah, that does feel like an oversight.
Yeah. So. And then I started reading through it, and I was like, this is clearly just like pasted on. Like the idea was, hey, cool, everyone liked Role Player. Let's let them play their characters, because, you know, at the end of Role Player, I was actually a little disappointed that I couldn't play my character, right? I couldn't do something with that character.
Sure.
Yeah, but then you start reading Role Player Adventures, and you're like, oh, well, Role Player was never designed to do this. And so they sort of pasted these rules on. And the more I read it, I'm like, this is just a worse version of every other dungeon crawler out there. Hmm. It never excited me. Now, to be fair, I never ended up playing it, but I did spend a significant amount of time reading rules.
Yeah,
you know,
that's so crazy.
To the tune of probably an hour. And it's funny because I asked your brother about it. I pulled it out, and I think it was your brother that taught us Role Player. It was really? an icon probably 4 or 5.
Oh, yeah, the original Role Player. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, the original Role Player.
I'm with you.
So I'm reading the rules, and he walks past, and I said, hey, have you ever played this? And he goes, no, I have it. I read the rules. And after I read the rules, I just kind of like, it just sort of turned me off, and I put it away. And I was like, and that was before I'd read them, right? But I was like, oh, huh, that's interesting. Because if anybody would have played it, I thought your brother would have.
Right. So you're like, saying that should have been a red flag for you?
Yes, it should have been a red flag. Instead, I wasted an hour of my time reading rules, and I was like, oh, no. Jordan was right. I should have never read these rules. And I took it back to the library.
So is it just too far from the spirit of the original game?
I don't think it's too far. I just, the way I would describe it, and again, haven't played it, but reading it, it looks like them just pasting on clunky rules to try to fit the original concept, right? Because the role player game where you create your own character by rolling the dice and putting them on your character sheet and stuff, it was never intended for that to become a character in an adventure. And when you do play that game, there's characters that are better than others, right? Because somebody wins the game.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to go into this dungeon crawl where one person clearly has a better character? I mean, there's just a lot of things like that, that it was never really intended to do what it did. And they're like, let's paste some rules on top of that. And they're kind of clunky, but we have to make them clunky to fit the original, you know, role player characters. It just had, it had a lot of these weird skill checks where you just rolled a lot of dice. It didn't even look very fun to me, I'll be honest. I just thought, you know, I'd rather, if I'm going to do this, I would rather do it with a dungeon crawl game that's fun. Have we talked about Dwellings of Eldervale yet? Because that game was way better.
No, we haven't yet. Nope.
Okay, we'll get to that one. Okay, so anyway, all right. That was my first
game. This was your first ill-advised, read the rules, didn't get it to the table.
Yeah, and I didn't feel bad about that one. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, sometimes you stumble. So then I grab Voidfall. Is it Voidfall?
It is Voidfall, yep.
Yeah, Voidfall.
I know because it's in my truck right now.
So Voidfall has... I grabbed the like collector's edition of Voidfall from the library. It's this huge box. It's like three times
super blinged out, right? Like,
yeah, it's three times bigger than the normal box, and the normal box is pretty big. It's just huge. It's massive. It puts Gloomhaven to shame. And so I pull that one out of the library, and I pull it out, and the first thing that turns me off is I pull the box open, and whoever had had it last had just kind of like, I don't want to say they'd just thrown it into the box because they hadn't, but the insert really didn't keep things in their place. So somebody, so it had been lifted up and looked at the bottom, and I might have even done it. So there was stuff everywhere, just a disaster. And so I spent probably 30, 45 minutes just sorting things and trying to figure out how to get things so that I could figure out, you know, what went where and what things were. And the game has a quote unquote tutorial that walks you through the game. And then it basically says, you know, play this round as the tutorial and then go back and play another round and add to it and then go on. And I will admit that this, as a rules digest and as a tutorial, this game was probably the least successful I've ever seen when it came to the rules at doing this.
I'm curious, other than what we've played on Board Game Arena, have you played any other Mind Clash game before?
I don't know what they are. Give me
Anachrony. I mean, that's the only one I can think of that we've played on.
Well, you know, I've played Anachrony.
Yeah, but my point is, like, did you read the rules, right?
No, I did not.
Hold on, I'll look up some of their others. I'm sure you haven't played the others. Like, there's like Tricarion, Legend of Illusion.
I'm looking on their website. There's nothing else I've played.
Okay. So anyway, I was just curious. I'm curious how, because I've actually read the Anachrony rules, and they didn't strike me as too bizarre, like, or too hard to understand, right? But I also think having played it quite a bit on Board Game Arena, that was helpful, right?
Sure. Sure.
Anyway, so go on. You were saying the rules are just pretty crummy.
I don't know if it's, I don't, crummy may
the tutorial's not well done then.
The tutorial is not well done, in my opinion. I feel like it would have been more successful to, so part of the reason the tutorial is not very successful and the rule book is not very successful is because the rule book basically puts all the rules in order in the rule book, and then it basically takes and says, skip this, you know, if you're doing the tutorial, skip this section, and go to the next one. And it's sort of confusing to find your next spot in the rules, and the tutorial sort of skips a lot of things that I think are important. I think that this game is complex enough that you either needed to a better tutorial, or you needed to just give us the whole thing. Just shove the entire thing down my throat at one shot. I'll figure it out. Let me read it, you know, straight through,
mm-hmm.
and don't you know, try to, you know, clean it up or anything. Just give it to me as a clear, concise rule book that is for a complex game. I've done enough complex games. I'll get it. You know, it might take a thorough reading, but the way the tutorial worked, by the time I was halfway into it, I'm like, I just don't understand any of this stuff. It really glossed over some of the more important points to the point where I wasn't even understanding the basic point. right? It would say, play this here and do this. We'll explain why later. And I'd be like, what? Why? I don't understand. Why? How does this all work? And you know, we're at a big con, so it's kind of hard to get like a video tutorial or stuff like that. And I think I don't blame the game. I think the game might be really great, and it's got a lot of buzz, and I think it might be a really good game. Mm-hmm. I just had a really bad experience with the rules. And I spent probably an hour, hour and a half, like stumbling through this. And eventually I just said, you know what? This is a really long game. I think it's probably a 5 to 6 hour game, and I could be wrong. But I think it's at least a 3 hour game. And if you're playing it at a table where no one's played it before, even the basic 3 hour game is going to end up being a 6 hour game, even if that's not the game type. And if it's actually a 6 hour game, it's going to be a 9 to 12 hour game with just trying to learn the game. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know what? It's not worth it. I'm going to put this back in the library, and we will check this. We will buy it when we get home, like you did. And we'll spend a Saturday learning the game together with a, you know, not trying to yell over everybody else in a con room.
Make it an event day, basically.
Yeah. And I can go back and I can watch some video tutorials, and I can just be more prepared. It was overwhelming. And the truth was, is the it feels like they kickstarted it, and then some of the original game pieces that were in the rule book got changed, got upgraded or whatever, and the rule book still showed the pictures of the old pieces.
Because
when I was trying to read the rules and find the pieces that it was showing, I couldn't find them. I couldn't figure out what it was talking about. There was a lot of stuff that sort of made it difficult on top of that I finally just said, I'm not going to do this. So that one I was less frustrated with, but I was still like, I watched other people play a bunch of games while I tried to digest this game, and just finally realized I was on a fool's errand. So you would think after those two experiences that I would not do what I did next. But you'd be wrong.
I mean, I feel like we know you well enough that we would not actually think that.
So I, at that point, took Voidfall, and I believe the next thing I did, I took it back, I put it back on the shelf, and it had been sitting there all day. No one had checked it out. It was sitting on the new game shelf, but no one had touched it. And that was Mr. President, the American Presidency, which is a GMT game. And if you know GMT games, that tells you a lot about what you need to know about the game. So it is a solo game, and we've talked about it on this podcast before. Josh brought it up before, but I saw it sitting there, and I was like, I've enjoyed some solo games in the past, never a GMT game, but I have played.
Well, no, wait, isn't Nemo's Adventure, isn't it GMT? I'm looking that up really quick.
I don't think it is.
Because that's the solo game that you played the last time we were at
I'm pretty positive it's not a GMT game.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it's a GMT, no.
Nemo's War, sorry.
I did play a lot of Nemo's War, and Nemo's War is fantastic. If you're looking for a
you're
solo
right.
game,
the publisher of that is War. Victory Point Game. Okay. Carry
I've
on.
Played GMT games before, right?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, Twilight Struggle. The reason that they still exist, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to think. I'm sure I've played other games of GMT as well, but that's the only one that's coming to my mind right now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've played several of their games, so we won't get into that. But anyways, if you play Twilight Struggle, you kind of know what you're getting into with Mr. President. So this is one of the heavier games listed on Board Game Geek, and its playtime is 360 to 600 minutes. So this is a, right off the bat, it's a, what is that, 6 to 10 hour game?
This is a cobra, and it flared out its cape and is warning you. Like, I am a multi-hour game.
Yes. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, we'll just, I specifically said I'm not going to play the whole game. I'm just going to set it up, and I'm going to play through basically one turn, just so I can get the gist of it, right? I realized that I wasn't going to be able to play the whole thing. It's too big. It was too much, and I knew that. But I've played solo games before, and I find them sort of interesting, especially if they provide a really interesting narrative experience, which I was hoping this would. The game puts you in the role of the president, and you have to balance, you know, foreign policy and Congress and the public
and the press
and everything that's going on as the president. You have to balance all of it, right? So I take the game out of its box, and it is massive. The board itself took up basically a table big enough for five or six people to play a game on. And this is a solo game. It's just, it's huge. And there's multiple sections to the board, right? There's your section that is foreign policy. And then there's a section that's like your turn order. And there's a section that's like your spare tokens. And then there's a section that's your dealings with Congress. You know, I would call it the Capitol Hill board. And so I just kind of get all that stuff out. And, you know, I thought finding all the pieces to Voidfall was bad. This was 10 times worse.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm reading the rules, and there's this paper thin, just wafer thin introductory. I'm like, oh, this is great. It's going to lead my hand. The tutorial here is going to work. And so I read this paper thin introductory, and it does kind of just give you sort of introductory. And it says, you know, this is kind of how the turn goes, and these are some mechanics that you're going to have to, you know, watch for. And then it says, if you're playing for the first time, set up this scenario. And there's multiple scenarios. And I don't know. I don't think I told you the full name of the game. It's Mr. President, the American Presidency, 2001 to 2020. And that makes it sound like you're playing from 2001 to 2020. You're not. You can pick a scenario of any of the presidents within that range. And okay. The last scenario in the book is 2020. Okay, so you are the equivalent of Donald Trump. You have, you know, the media is against you, Congress is against you. There's an inquisition into possible wrongdoings. You're going for re-election, and you have COVID breathing down your neck. So you basically set up the scenario, and the scenario is the introductory scenario, because the goal is to play 1 year with an experienced cabinet, an experienced team around you, because they've been in those roles for some time, and you have to get reelected. That's your goal, is to get reelected. And so it's intended to just get your feet wet, right? You're only playing 1 year. So then I start going through, and it tells you to follow the setup. And I start reading through the setup, and I go through each section. And you know, the at this point, I'm already probably 45 minutes in. Just setting the board out, trying to separate all the tokens, read through the little paper thin introductory, and then, you know, understand what I'm supposed to be doing, and then start getting to the setup. And I'm going through the setup, and the setup is like, choose, you know, your cabinet, and you're pulling things out of the box, and you have to set up like, you have to find all the tokens for each location, for like the Middle East and for Russia and for China, and you're finding.
I mean, it's a GMT game, so these are mostly like all chits, right?
Yes, they're all chits. You are setting out, this is going to sound hyperbolic, but it's not. You're setting out hundreds of chits. And they're organized by chip type, not necessarily where they're supposed to be on the board. So you might have like a complication chit that goes on China, and one that goes on Russia, and one that goes on, you know, Colombia or something, South America. And so you're going through, and you're doing one chit at a time, one chit type, and you're putting it out. And you're setting out dozens and dozens and dozens of these. And you're having to find sometimes the specific ones, because they might have various different numbers on them. And the other thing, you know, is I'm the board is so big that I basically have to stand up and kind of lean over it. I'm doing this for an hour, hour and a half. And I'm the youngin' on the podcast, and I'm 46. I'm like, I'm out. Like,
yeah, my back started to hurt just hearing you describe this. So
my back is killing me at this point, and I'm not even close to being set up. And so I'm determined. I'm like, I'm not giving up without playing at least one round of this game. So I keep going, and there are certain steps where I'm like, I don't want to do that. That seems like a lot of work to just get my chits out on the board, right? So I skipped a couple of them. I'd move on, and I'd get to a step that required me to have the chits that I'd skipped. So I'm like, oh, crap. So I go back. I do it again. Anyway, I get through, and I don't remember. I'm pretty sure I told you guys how long I spent setting up this game, but I don't. Was it 3 hours? I think it was 3 hours I spent just setting up the game.
I believe at the time that was what you communicated.
So I get to the end of the 3 hours. At this point, I'm experiencing the worst back pain I've ever experienced, and that includes the 8-round last chance qualifier at mm-hmm. War Machine Weekend. I've not had this much back pain ever. I mean, I am suffering at this point. I'm having to take, you know, breaks and sit down for a few minutes so that I can continue laying out chits. So at this point, I've got everything set up, and I'm ready to begin. and I start going through kind of the phases and I start reading it, and it's a GMT game, right? It's using acronyms more than what gets used at work. And I haven't announced this on the podcast, but I will now. I'm a federal employee as of, well, I don't know when this is going to come out, but I work for the federal, government now. So if you can imagine how many acronyms are in my daily day to life, this game has just as many, maybe more. And there's no guide in the back that says this is what the acronyms mean. It just sort of expects you to know what they are. So like I'm basically doing web searches on Google to, figure out what the acronym is. Jeez. I'm trying, and sometimes it would tell me to grab this icon or grab this chit. And I would look for a picture that showed me what that chit looked like. Couldn't find it. And I just, at that point, I was like, I've had enough. I desperately want to play this game, and I still do. But I realized that it was massive folly to try to do it at a convention.
Ah, okay. That's encouraging to hear. I mean, if that's the source of the folly, okay then.
I am kind of curious. Are you going to buy this game now?
No. I still want to play it, but I'm not going to. It's so expensive.
There's no actual path to where. Maybe I'll change my Christmas present idea, Jay. I would love to inflict this on Trevor.
Oh my gosh, no.
That'd be amazing.
Because I did say that my Christmas present, Trevor, is going to be the next game you're going to talk about, I think, Trevor, which is Dwellings of Eldervale. But
we can skip to that one because we need some joy in our life. But here's the thing. The original print run of Mr. President, I believe, has ran out and sold out. They've already announced a second edition because they found there's some misprints in the original, and they've figured out that there's some balance issues. I don't think they're bad, but there's some slight balance issues. So they've already announced a second edition. So if you're going to inflict this upon me, you'll have to do it next year for Christmas when the second edition.
Fine.
But I will.
Don't
I
think
will
that he
dedicate,
won't remember that.
Oh, I just wrote it down.
He won't. But so I would dedicate a room. You'd have to dedicate a room because 10 hours is too long to play this game. Plus, multiple hours of setup. But if you had a room dedicated to board gaming, solo board gaming, you could set this all out, get all the chits out, do everything. And then you could come in and take a turn as a bite-sized piece and then leave and come back later. And that's how I want to experience it. And I think that it would tell some really great stories.
And don't you think that's kind of, in a way, what they intended to?
I don't want to put words in their mouth in any way, shape, or form. But I think that their intention was that this is more of a...
Like you play it over the course of a week or a month, right? And exactly like you're saying, it's maybe one turn a day kind of thing.
Well, keep in mind that you could pick a scenario. You could pick, like, say, 2001. You pick 2001. The scenario opens with 9/11. You're the newly elected president. You have to deal with it. And then you have to be reelected. And if you fail to get reelected, your game's over, right?
Okay.
But if you get reelected, your game's going to go for another four more years in most situations, unless you randomly get impeached or whatever. So, there's all these really cool scenarios in it that I think are very interesting. But one of the things that GMT stated was that they'd gotten tons and tons of feedback from people who basically, let me tell you about my level 20 Paladin president. Right. Just tons of people who had great times playing this game and had really amazing experiences telling a story, a narrative event of them being president. And that's what I wanted to feel. So I've not given up on this game, but it's going to be I'm going to be hard pressed to ever actually end up playing it.
And you're definitely not going to do it at a con. Right.
No, I mean, that was a massive mistake. Yeah. And it's funny because how many people came up to me, looked at the table, looked me in the eyes and said, "You're brave," and then walked away.
And Trevor takes that like just all in stride, baby.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm like, well, I was.
You're like, I am brave. You know what?
I'm determined. I'm going to do this no matter how stupid it is.
You know what? The best part about that is Trevor is basically describing me with the entire mall and bringing my entire family. Like, that was the same kind of attitude. I am going to do this, and nothing is going to stand in the way. And I don't care that I reserved the wrong hotel 25 minutes drive away from the con, and so on, right?
I am kind of curious, Josh. Maybe this is skipping too far into the review category of it, but what we're close to time anyway, but do you regret decisions that you made, or were they wonderful family memories, or do you think you should have done like a smaller group of people, or
overall I'm more happy that I did it than I am regretful, right? But there are definitely decisions that, like,
would have been,
you know, like, like bringing the whole group in at different days is so hard, and I would have done meal prep a little differently, and I would have done
mistake was not hiring a quartermaster to keep everyone fed.
Yeah, 100% that just like follows the group around with a chuck wagon, basically. So here's the thing, like, I am already very seriously, Jay, looking at BGG at Sea, which is a 7-day cruise that the Board Game Geek puts on June 30th through July 7th. Like, let me just put it this way. When I win my reelection, that's my reward to myself for winning reelection, is I'm going on a cruise. And so that will mean it will self-select the group a little bit, because I will say to my children, you may come on this with me, and daddy will buy this, this, and this. But like, if you can't make the schedule work, you know, there's only one point of entry.
Yeah, there's only one time frame. Right?
Exactly. Right. So
let me ask you a question. Would it have been better or more, would it have been a better experience had you rented a large cabin locally that could fit everyone and said, this is my week, we're going to go play board games. You brought in your own food. You brought everyone in. It would have been a much easier logistical problem to get them to maybe a cabin in, say, North Utah, for example.
Right.
And just, you brought all the same people together, your father, your brother, all of your kids. And we did that and we brought all of our own board games.
Yeah. The honest truth is, yes, that would be better. The only thing it would lack is we wouldn't have access to some of the hottest games. Right. But I think,
which
honestly,
is, which is a Josh thing, but
it's not really. I mean,
like, it's mine and it's Jordan's as well, and your father to a small degree. But I think we could get if we made a concerted effort to buy some of the hottest.
Yes, games. And like if we heat mapped it a little more deliberately, you know, to inform those buying decisions, right? Like,
yes,
the one thing that a cabin con wouldn't do is it doesn't have quite as much the random opportunity for discovery. But again, I think we could still get most of that experience by exactly what you're saying, by sort of being more deliberate about, like, you know, here's what we bought, here's the new hotness library that we built, you know, for a little cabin con, right?
So I mean, how much of that do you think you could overcome by reaching out to people we know, because we know quite a few people who have board games, and just say, hey, can you throw us, you know, two or three, can we borrow two or three of your hidden gems that we've never heard of and make our own library?
Yeah, you could. Yeah. Again, I think that's such a minor miss, right? That what you're saying, you're right. It would 100% be an overall better experience to do it with a large group like this, right?
Yeah.
It's funny. I was playing a game at one point in time. So one of the days, I don't think I talked about this, like, again, I went all in on this. Like, I bought all of my kids, all of my family, the t-shirts that were for BGG Con, right? I was like, we're all wearing them on this day so that we look like a family reunion. Cause that's what it was. Right.
Yeah.
Sure,
and some guy, like, he's like, is this like your family, like your whole family? And he was kind of in awe. Like, he's like, I just don't think I could get my whole family to come to something like this, you know? And I'm like, well, I'm like, yep, we're pretty cool. Anyway. But we should definitely take a much more serious look at a cabin con, Trevor.
I'm not saying that that's the idea. That's just the first thing that came to my mind. And I think feels like there are ways that we could make that same experience. Because I think that what you attempted, the dream, it had it gone off flawlessly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you shot the moon and maybe almost got there. I think you did get pretty close. And I think you feel that. But I think that if you want that experience, it's probably something slightly different than what Board Game Geek Con is in the first place. So maybe you should gear directly towards that.
Yeah. Yeah. Curate a little more, right? Like, yeah. I agree. I think you're right. So,
okay. So Dwellings of Eldervale. So, when we, this is one of the most Josh things ever. When we decided we were going to Board Game Geek and we were about a week away, I told Josh, I said, we should start, you know, picking out the games that we want to play, right? And so he creates a spreadsheet. And I catch
some spreadsheets.
Yeah, I catch the fever and I build a heat map on that spreadsheet that takes everyone's votes and creates the most popular game by demographics. So it had the most popular game by older people, by younger people, by men, by women, and by, I think that's it. Anyway, so we kind of knew, you know, the girls wanted to play the Fox game. I can't think of the name of it.
The Fox Experiment.
Yes. The boys wanted to play something else. I think it was Voidfall. But the game that everybody picked as their most interested in, or the one they ended up having the highest rating, was Dwellings of Eldervale. And I have to laugh because when your second oldest arrived, she turned to me and she said, and I don't think you heard this. She said, did you have a spreadsheet too? And I said, what do you mean?
Oh, my sweet summer child.
Yeah. I'm like, what do you mean? That spreadsheet was ours. I made it. I contributed to it as much as your father did.
You were like, both I and your father belong in an asylum. Yes.
So anyway, I got out Dwellings of Eldervale. I got to play it. I believe I played it twice. And this is an interesting game because it really has, you look at it and you think the theme is really strong, right? It's got these miniatures,
fantasy monsters, and
yeah, and you're playing a fantasy race that is fighting for control of Eldervale, and the dwellings part is you're building your homes in Eldervale. And you know, it sort of looks and feels like a 4X when you're, you know, being taught it. But the truth is this is pretty solidly a Euro. The theme is good and it does fit well and I enjoyed it. But ultimately this is just a really well themed Euro. And that's why I really loved it. And I think that's why it got such good ratings on Board Game Geek. And I'd not, it's funny because when we started adding games,
it's one that I had in stock and have sold and had basically didn't restock because it had people stopped being interested in it.
Yeah. It's 3 years old at this point, right?
I didn't realize it was that old. Okay.
Well, and it's had a more recently, it's had like an update or refresh as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that part. So at one point Josh had put a bunch of games on our spreadsheet. And he said, is there anything else you want to add? And so I started, I'm like, huh, what do I want to play? And I went and just kind of like skimmed through the hotness. And Dwellings of Eldervale was on the hotness at the time that I looked. And so I did not realize it was old as it was either, because it was on the hotness, which to me, you know, almost certainly says it's, you know, at least within the last year. It's currently not on the hotness. It just happened to be that day and it was sort of down at the bottom. But it happened to be that day. And I looked at it and I'm like, what is this? And like, it had a really high rating, some great reviews, and it checked all the boxes. It looked like a 4X fantasy to me. I was like, oh, this looks amazing. And clearly that same sort of feeling went through everyone else that rated it, because it ended up being our highest, you know, interest game going into the con. So,
I got the second edition at the start of November of 2022.
Okay. I don't know what I played. I have no idea. We got it out of the library.
Sure, yeah.
I think it was probably the Kickstarter version, the first version.
Yeah, it was like chunky.
Yeah. anyway, and we're so far removed now, I'm having difficulty recalling the mechanics, but you basically place workers on the board. You get to take things, little tokens off the board that have resources on them, and you get the resources, and then you get the token. And the token can be turned in for more of those same resources, or you can put the token on your actions, your action cards that you have in front of you, your tableau, and it modifies those actions. So the each card has sort of like a location where you can put a token, and it modifies the action. So there's just this interaction where you're building a sort of an engine, and it's really a 4X that it's a Euro that has this 4X painted on, and it does a really good job of it. Don't get me wrong. And it was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. But it was a lot less of the theme than I actually expected, in a good way.
Hmm.
I was very impressed with it. It was a great game.
It has like a ton of races and stuff too, right? So it has a ton of replay, doesn't it?
I think there's 8 different, I don't want to call them races, but factions. And then each of those factions has a 2 sides. So they're the sheet that you get with that faction has 2 different races that go with it. So they are chaos and order, light and dark, earth, fire, wind, and water. So there's 8 different elements that make up the 8 different factions, and then each faction has 2 races. So when you get your tray that has all your stuff in it, you pick between the 2 races available to you. For example, the first game I played, I think I played Chaos, and one side was like the essentially the Skaven. It was the rat people. And then the other side, I think, was it feels like the evil mushrooms or something. I don't remember, because I choose
my favorite phrase of the day, just for the record, but
I don't remember. But there's definitely, yes, there's two races on every single one. I will say that I got to the very end of the game, looked down at my player sheet, and realized that I hadn't used any of my special abilities the entire game.
Brilliant. I hear that's a key to success.
Yes, it totally is. Anyway, I was very impressed, very excited to play it again. And I felt bad that we didn't get more plays of it.
I'm impressed you got 2.
I might have only gotten 1. I thought I got 2.
I know your family got 2, but I just didn't know if you were on both of them.
I think I was. I think we played 4-player game first, and then I think we played a 3-player game next. So, yeah, I think my son played the first time, and then Jed showed up after one of your many trips to go get food, and he left to go do something with Jed. So
probably to play Oh No Volcano, for the record.
I think they were on to the Hungry Hungry Lava.
Oh, yeah. Lekker Lava. Okay.
Yeah, Lekker Lava, yes.
Well, any grand thoughts before we close out?
I can't remember if I said my game of show, only because we played it the most, and it sort of demonstrates how I didn't really get into many plays of many heavier games, was probably Fit to Print.
Hmm.
Which I think we talked about in the other show. That's kind of it's almost like Galaxy Trucker meets Woodland Animals printing newspapers, right? Anyway, I don't know if I just want to close out with that. I did have a game of show at least. And one of the games I bought at the show that I didn't get to play, I've since played, which is Kutna Hora City of Silver. And it is a solid Euro. It has got a lot of fun to it.
So my game of show was Dwellings of Eldervale. I played 3 other games that we're not going to get to, but I'm just going to speed around them really quick. One of them was Everdell, and I know lots of people played it, but it was the first time I'd ever played it, and I thought it was really good. And we played the complete collection, but we just played the base game in it, so it just had all of the really nice bits, and that was that helped, honestly, for me. It really was fun experience. It was a neat experience and had great table presence. The other two I played was one called Sweet Mess. And you basically, it was a baking show. Every player was attempting to bake, their things for the baking show and not get eliminated. And I won't go into a lot of detail other than that game had some great table presence as well. It was a lot of fun. It's one of those games that in a year or two, no one will remember it even was printed. But it was fun. It was interesting. If the theme is up your alley, give it a shot. And the last one I played had one of the best table presences of the entire weekend, and that was Last Light.
Oh, man. Yeah, I want to play this one bad.
So this one is a game where your galaxy or your solar system is dying, and you're trying to farm the light from the universe. And the person to get to 20 light first wins. And this is really a really, really light 4X, space 4X. And I will just say that there are other 4Xs that do it better, and there's some problems with the game, but it does do what it's intended to do, which is play a quick 4X in a very short time period. It does that pretty well. And it looks great. It looks amazing on the table. It has this really neat board that where the galaxy rotates, the planets rotate around the sun.
Oh, I didn't know that. Jeez. I just thought that the planets were like these giant, beautiful marbles, basically.
Oh, they are. They have their own. The planets have their flight stands, and the marbles mean something. The colors on the marbles mean something. The different elements of the marbles provide what sort of things they, resources they provide. Wow. And one of the gimmicks is that as you, you know, as you move into the galaxy, the center planets rotate faster around the sun than the middle planets, and the really far out planets don't move at all. So as you move on to your base starts the farthest ring, so your base never moves. But as you move your ships onto the board, the planets move, and your ships might end up being in front of somebody else's base. It sort of forces combat a little bit that way. But yeah, the whole board gets just gets upended every time the turning happens, which is equivalent to when everyone's played out their cards. So it's a very simple mechanic. You play a card face down, everyone reveals their card, then you resolve the card, has an action on it, you resolve the action. You can't pick that card up again unless something lets you, and then there's a refresh card, and when everyone's played their refresh card, the whole galaxy rotates. It was a fun game, and I enjoyed it. Like I said, I think there's other games that do that genre, the 4X quick genre, better. So I don't know, and it's a very expensive game, so I don't know that I'd ever pay for it. But if somebody else said, hey, let's play it or let's check it out again, I would absolutely be up to play it again.
And when you say quick, Trevor, is this a 90-minute game? Is it less than that?
Oh, it's less than that, I think.
Really? Wow. Okay. Cool. I know my little brother totally wants me to play it too, so.
Yeah, he was kind of with me where he was like, yeah, there's other things that do it better, but it's interesting. You know, so Board Game Geek says 45 to 75 minutes.
Oh, my heck. Interesting.
I think with teaching it, we were done in about, I would say 50 minutes, I think, is how quickly we finished. And it's a lot like other 4Xs of this genre where they're trying to finish quickly. It goes from we're doing our thing to bam, game's done pretty quickly. Like all of a sudden people score. When you get near the end, people score a ton of victory points really quickly and accelerates to the end. But it was still close. Like, I basically snapped victory out of your brother's hands and beat him right at the last second.
Good, yes. Do that more.
I knew you would approve of that. But yeah, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous on the table. And you can tell from the box that they have expansions planned. So
that's cool.
Maybe with some expansions, I will like it even more. But it felt a little too thin upon initial play. That's it.
Final words, Jay.
All right. And that's it. Let us know what you guys think of things. And we want to hear your opinions and hot takes.